cold dawn broke on the horizon outside. The bedroom door shushed open, bringing the morning air and a warlord on predator's toes. I lay in a nest of polyester blankets and listened to his footsteps cross the carpet, every muscle pulled tight. You reveal yourself in breath, in the nerves of your face. Count the breaths in and out. He sat on the edge of the bed. Smooth breath, relax your eyes. Don't let the lids shake. Then his calloused old hand was stroking my hair, cupping my scalp, fingers dripping like algae onto my ears and cheeks. The warlord lived in Jalalabad, in a swath of Afghanistan where the soil is rich with poppies and landmines, in a house awash in guns. People whispered that he was a heroin trafficker. His tribal loyalists clotted the orange groves and rose gardens outside, AK-47s and dust-caked fingers. They said he was ruthless in war, that his skin was scarred by an arrow. There was a vague whisper about a legendary ambush, the warlord killing enemies with his bare hands. And now those ropey hands were petting my hair, silent and brazen. I clung to one thing. Brian, the photographer, was in the bathroom. Water slapped the floor. How long would his shower last? And how could I escape the warlord's lechery without offending him? The truth was, we needed him. He was an enemy of the Taliban, funded by the U.S. government, making a play for power in the vague new order that had begun when American soldiers toppled the Taliban government. I was a stranger here, and he was my best source. He said he knew where Osama bin Laden was hiding, and now he was petting me like a puppy. Nobody could sleep through it. The bed creaked. Stale breath sank in my face. Papery lips pressed my forehead. I opened my eyes and tried to look groggy. What are you doing?
Shh.
I struggled upright, cleared a phlegmy throat, and tried to sound dignified. You are putting me into a very awkward position. A black and white movie line spilling out in a moment of panic. He smiled and reached for my face. Please don't do that, I snapped. Then suddenly, silence. The water stopped. The pipes fell quiet. The warlord glanced around, stood, and slipped back out of the room. Brian stepped out. His hair gleamed with water. I turned my eyes to him and hissed, "We have got to get out of here." I had met Mohammed Zaman weeks earlier in Peshawar, a cramped kaleidoscope of a city perched on the last edge of organization and authority in Pakistan. To the west stretched the lawless tribal territories, the Khyber Pass, the Afghan frontier. Driven away by the Taliban, Zaman had been living an exile's life in Dijon, France, before September 11th. Under chilly French skies, he'd pined after his family's lands, the service of armed tribesmen, and, presumably, the rich, fresh fields of Afghan poppy. When U.S. jets started dropping bombs on Afghanistan, Zaman raced back to Peshawar and holed up in a rented house, waiting for the Americans to dispose of the Taliban and clear the path home, and eager to make some money while he was at it. I sat in the shadows of a taxi late one night, my face and head draped in scarves, making my way through the jangling streets of Peshawar for an audience with Zaman. I liked it, all of it, enormously. The poetry of the place, the intrigue of war, imagining myself veiled in the back of a clopping carriage, bringing secrets to a bootlegger. The warlord's return had drawn throngs of men for endless meetings. I picked my way around the crowds on the lawn and sat waiting in a long drawing room. A door opened, and out marched an American diplomat I'd seen at the embassy. His eyes skimmed mine, and he hurried on, stone-faced. He didn't like being spotted there. I sat and watched him leave. Zaman came out, tall and deliberate, face sagging from his skull. We sat with tea between us, and I asked him to take me to Afghanistan when he went. He was solemn. "I take your life on my honor," he said from the heights of his mountainous nose. "They will have to kill me before they can harm you."